In the absence of such a finding, it's unlawful to continue to incarcerate them.
You know, just as we wrap up, Thomas Harvey, just coming from Ferguson, the first night we were there, we were covering people in a parking lot who were protesting across the street with the riot police. They were standing in between the fire department and the police station. The police station was just being built. It was a modern, major facility. Is the money of these people being taken going to build that police station?
So I don't know the answer to that question, but I will tell you that what my clients have told me since the first day I've ever represented anybody is this is not about public safety, it's about the money. And whether or not that building was built on the backs of poor people in Ferguson and the rest of the region, I don't know. I really don't know the answer. But I know my clients believe it. I know the optics are bad. And I realize that that dynamic is what's contributing to some of the tensions between law enforcement and the community. And if we don't take advantage of this opportunity to have some real structural reform and revise this system that is racist, that has a systemic racism built into it, it's going to be a huge missed opportunity.
Thomas Harvey, we have to go, and we thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of Arch City Defenders. Tomorrow on Democracy Now!, an activist guide to archiving video. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland. Today's guest is Brandon Letzinger from Cascadia Now. We'll talk about the Raining Man Festival coming up this weekend in Washington State. But first, this KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Oregon State Fair, Dia de la Familia, inviting you and your family to come out on Sunday, August 31st in Salem. A celebration of Latino culture, Dia de la Familia includes live Latin music, food, mariachi, ballet folklorico, face painting, and the Chemeketa Community College women's soccer team at the Kids Kick Camp.
KBOO is preparing for our legendary book and record sale happening on Sunday, September 14th at the Volunteers of America building, 537 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. We're accepting donations of books, comics, LPs, CDs, DVDs, VHS, and cassette tapes, and all donations are tax deductible. Your discards are another person's treasure, and all sales benefit your community radio station, KBOO. So bring those donations down to the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, during our business hours. For more information, please contact Jesse, 503-231-8032, extension 213, or online via email, volunteer@kboo.org. That's the annual book and record sale on Sunday, September 14th.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing.
And there is animal cops. good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. My name is Paul Roland. And as Steve said, we do have Brandon Letzinger calling in from, or actually, I guess we called him from, I believe he's in Seattle, but we'll talk about that. I just want to talk a little bit about that song first. I love that song. That's the Jefferson Airplane. I don't know if anybody heard my early morning folk show. Last Thursday, I did a little bit of a tribute to Woodstock. This is the 45th anniversary of that occasion. And I played a lot of artists, folk and folk rock artists, from who performed, or as in the case of Joni Mitchell, who was supposed to perform, but her agent got her another gig and she couldn't. Of course, she wrote about it in her song Woodstock. But anyway, what I wanted to say was that album called Bark, from which that wonderful song, which I think is very appropriate to the theme, When the Earth Moves Again, is really kind of like, you know, after all the terrible events, the assassinations, the riots in frustration, the grinding on of the horrible war in Vietnam, the disappointments of so much incredible, powerful people's struggle that went on, and some successes, but just the it really condensed a lot of the incredible hopeful vision of the 1960s. That one song, I really feel, and it sort of showed a new sensibility that emerged, so the ecological sensibility, kind of the out of the back to the land movement. And of course, what we're going to talk about today, Cascadia and the bioregional movement, really emerged, had its roots then. I had Judy from Planet Drum Foundation, who was up here for a conference a couple months ago, where Brandon spoke at. And she talked about that, the diggers in Haight-Ashbury kind of growing into the back to the land movement and this bioregional vision. But anyway, we're going to get into that. I just wanted to note that our album came out in 1971. It was the first after their 1969 Volunteers album, which was so heavily featured at Woodstock. And of course, first one to feature the violinist Papa John Creech. And Bark sort of got me thinking about the our local group, Bark, which had a fire at their Osborne building a couple weeks ago. And I don't know if they need any help with that. I know they're still out of the building because of smoke and fire damage. They will be able to re-inhabit that space down at 205 Southeast Grand. They do have their complete set of hikes, campouts, trainings. And if you want to call them up, see how they're doing, their number is 503-331-0374. Their website is www.bark-out.org. Email info@bark-out.org. That's that. Brandon, are you with us?
I'm here. Thank you.
Good morning. Sorry for that long-winded introduction. How are you today? Are you in Seattle?
Yeah, up here in Seattle.
Right on. And so you're organizing this Raining Man Festival, I understand. You're a group Cascadia now.
That's right, yeah. So it's our first ever Cascadia Raining Man Festival. So it'll be happening this weekend, starting Friday, and then going all through Sunday and Monday.
And what inspired this this Raining Man Festival?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's been a long time in the coming, but we're very excited that this will kind of be the first time that we're really working to get together and gather and actually even start thinking about what exactly Raining Man is and what it means. And so I think a lot of this will actually, it's not about the event, but it's actually about getting people together kind of for our first event and then to really help start planning for what 2015 Raining Man might look like and what 2015 might look like in general for Cascadia organizing, both here in Seattle and down in Portland and then, of course, around the region.
So, obviously, one almost can't help but thinking of the contrast when you say Raining Man to the other festival that's going on right now. Of course, Burning Man I'm talking about, and the irony that Burning Man actually got rained out on Monday, kind of an unusual rainstorm turned their playa, as they call it, into thick mud, and they had to kind of close down the site for a day. I'm not sure. I guess they're probably back up. They were hoping to open it back up by yesterday or today. I actually haven't heard that. But so I take it there is some sort of contrast or sort of play off of that Burning Man.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think a big part of it is that, you know, like Burning Man is this amazing kind of cultural event, but, you know, now it's gotten so large, it draws in tens of thousands of people. But there's a lot of, like, I think, founding principles there that are really strong of gathering people together, you know, who really want to kind of help make an impact. And what we wanted to do was kind of reshift that focus to all of the amazing people and artists and musicians that are doing amazing work here in the Northwest. And so it's kind of going to be a weekend of music and of art and culture. And what's really exciting is it's just the first year, and, you know, there's been an amazing amount of interest. And I think in the future of really kind of being able to come together for a lot of people to present an alternative that, one, is closer and then can also be representative of the values of the Northwest is kind of what we're hoping to accomplish.
And we'll get into all the details, you know, whether there's still time to register, how to register, what's going to be happening there, where it is, all that sort of stuff, and also inviting people to call in and talk about this and other issues around the idea of Cascadia. But let's just stay a little bit with this Burning Man, if you don't mind. I just read this article saying that... I'll just quote from this. I actually don't remember where I got it, but the Raucous Festival, which encourages creativity and innovation, now attracts moguls known for their creativity and innovation. CBS News's Michelle Miller reports. Larry Page and Sergey Brin of Google, Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and Elon Musk of Tesla Motors have been in attendance. New York Times technology columnist Nick Bilton said many Silicon Valley movers and shakers see Burning Man as a networking opportunity. They're going with the hopes of trying to meet entrepreneurs that have successful startups and befriending them with the eventual goal of being able to invest in those companies, Bilton said, which is kind of ironic if all this is true. I have no way to know, and I've never been to this event. I understand you haven't either. But, I mean, supposedly money doesn't play any role in this festival yet. It seems like, A, you have to have a fair amount of money to get in. Tickets cost start at $380 or something and go up to like over $1,000. So, I mean, the idea that money isn't involved seems to be a bit of a smoke and mirrors to me. And also, you know, you have to have money to get there, to stay there. And then it seems like people are actually using it as a way to further their monetary ambitions in quote real life outside of the Burning Man little bubble.
It's interesting because, I mean, I think, you know, you also have a lot of amazing aspects. You have people who plan all year and kind of really, and then they have a community of people that they go with. And so there's a lot of, like, these things that are really nice, but then I think you also see an increasing kind of corporate, you know, I mean, and a lot of the money goes to cover these costs, but, you know, they set up, you know, it's a city that it kind of appears out in the desert for several days, and then it'll just kind of vanish back for another year. But, I mean, to the point where they set up an airport so that people can fly in, there's, you know, they have their own police force, their own medical services. And I think, you know, what we're more interested in is kind of maybe taking it back to the roots of what the event actually started as. And, I mean, in the 1970s, I think it started with 17 people. And from there, it grew into the event that you see today. And I think here in the Northwest, we also have kind of this amazing tradition of festivals that, you know, are a little bit more maybe off the beaten path and that are kind of also, you know, a little bit more maybe authentic and kind of grass-grown, where I think in Oregon, you know, there's always the country fair, which also is now getting quite large. But, you know, I think every year there's also a music festival called Mutant Festival, which is kind of a legal off-the-grid music festival that involves hundreds of people in a national park, or you have the Okanagan Barter Fair or, you know, various rendezvous that happen in national forests all over the place that you don't necessarily hear about. And so we really want to take advantage of all of these different events and the kind of the creativity and the culture that really goes into it to present something new, and then to also present, though, a space for anybody interested in the idea of Cascadia to kind of come and to meet other people who are also interested in the idea. We really do see it as kind of this emerging culture and this emerging movement, which is really growing right now, and which is great to see. And we just want to give a place for everybody to come around that, and also to actually just help define it. You know, it's a term that's still kind of in constant evolution, and people are still really exploring what it means. And we absolutely want people to have as much say as they can in defining what it means both for themselves, but then also for all of us as a larger community.
So, you know, I know there's a lot of people have a lot of different ideas. Maybe people still aren't really that familiar with the idea of Cascadia, although I assume people listen to KBOO a fair amount, have heard some. I've had a few programs dealing with the issue, talking specifically about that bi-regional convergence that we organized at Portland State a couple, 3 months back. Well, let me give the phone number. It's a 503-231-8187 if you want to join this conversation. But before I give the word back to you, I just want to say there's criticisms that have emerged and are ongoing about whether this is a kind of a fantasy of a white homeland that people talk about, whether it's sort of a fantasy world in and of itself that doesn't deal with the hard political realities, whether it's a, quote, secession movement. There's just a lot of ideas out there. Some of them, you know, have some traction. Some of them are just sort of out there in the ether. So we'll get into all that, and hopefully we'll have some callers who would like to engage on that. But just to talk about how you, Brandon, got into this, kind of where you come from, and a little bit about your group, Cascadia Now, again, before we get into more into the specifics of this Raining Man Festival.
Yeah, sure. So for me, like, I guess I've been involved for about 7 years. And, you know, I really think it's an incredible movement. You know, personally, I see it as, you know, all of these amazing things. Cascadia is first and foremost, it's just the place we live. And it's the bioregion we live in, as defined by these kind of watersheds, right? The watersheds of the Fraser and Columbia rivers. And I think it then also does speak to this issue that, you know, we live in an area that is distinct from surrounding areas, from the rest of the United States, from other parts of Canada, and is a way that we can really kind of focus together. And so for me personally, I see it also a lot as kind of building a regional identity, this kind of focus not so much on being American or Canadian, but really really building a sense of identity and a sense of place that allows us to connect in. So it's connecting into our local communities, it's connecting into our neighborhoods, and then it's connecting into this greater regional identity that says we have a lot more in common with people north of the border, say up in Victoria or Vancouver, than we do, say, with a city, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 miles away. You know, I think there are, you know, some criticisms out there. You know, I hear the thing of the white-centric or the, you know, whatever, and I just to counter that right out the front, you know, I've never heard anybody kind of promote hate speech or be accepting of that. I think that's one thing that's very nice, is that there are some very basic principles that I think a lot of people agree on, and not being accepting of hate speech is one of the first and foremost, but that's something that's very important always to be vigilant about. And I think what's great, though, is that it is kind of a social movement where I think people are very vocal. If they see any type of thing like that, they shut it down immediately or they'll target it. But then more than that, I think, you know, Cascadia is an idea and a movement for everybody who lives here, you know, barring hate speech, barring these other things. And so really working together to define what that means, I think, is really important. And so for Cascadia Now, primarily what we do is we raise awareness of what Cascadia is. And we've been active since maybe about 2007. And since then, it's been really amazing to watch this idea of Cascadia kind of grow and evolve and connect with more and more people. And now to the point where we're connecting with, you know, literally tens of thousands of people around the Northwest. For our organization specifically, we're now seeking kind of a 501c3 fiscal sponsorship organization is what we'd like to become, and really just geared towards providing services and tools so that everybody can kind of realize and envision the change they want to see and work towards what they feel is important in their communities. And so that's kind of the process we've started going through, and it's kind of exciting. But we also see us fitting in with all of these other really amazing organizations, many of which are down in Portland. You have, radio organizations like yourself, or groups like Cascadia Matters in Bend, or the Portland kind of Cascadia branch, or the Cascadia Education Project, which also do really incredible things. And we look forward to kind of connecting in with them.
So, but your group Cascadia Now, it has also chapters, different local groups, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so really, like, we've been around for a long time and we've had a lot of people involved, but now we're really focusing on kind of three different areas. And so a big one is that we want to provide direct services for our groups and chapters, but then also for projects and events, anything within the context of Cascadia we want to help with. And then we will have sponsored events, projects, and that can be really anything, but things like the Cascadia Poetry Festival, or things like, a football team, or anything that's really kind of focused on maybe this regional identity or cultural issue. And then we do indeed have chapters and groups, and that's something that we're really focusing on right now and is quite exciting. I think we have members in dozens and dozens of cities. We have active chapters and groups either kind of happening now or that will be happening very shortly in about 10 to 15 different cities. And that seems to be really just kind of growing right now. The idea has been growing, and it's really fun to see where it's going.
So let me remind listeners, my name is Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm speaking with Brandon Letzinger with Cascadia Now and one of the organizers of the Raining Man Festival coming up this Labor Day weekend up at the Finney Farm near Concrete, Washington, I believe, which is in the foothills of the North Cascades. So I invite people to call in. If you have questions about this event, if you have anything you want to share about, your ideas about Cascadia, your questions, concerns, the number is 503-231-8187. It's 8:25 around, so we have about a half hour left to talk about all these things. So, yeah, let's get into it. So the Rainy Man Festival, I said it's up in Washington State, and you can maybe talk about where and how, and if there's, again, I guess the main question for me right now is how do people register? Is there still time to register for this event?
You know, there is still time. You can register straight on through the website. It's RainingMan2014.org, and we're recommending a $35 suggested donation, but nobody will be turned away. We definitely don't want money to be an inhibiting factor, and so we hope that everybody will join us for an awesome weekend of presentations, workshops, music, art, and if nothing else, just having fun. So hanging out and camping, it'll be a great time.
And it starts Friday evening?
Yeah, so, we're telling people to show up Friday. I think the gates open around 5. But then I think a lot of people will be just showing up for Saturday and Sunday. And then Monday will be kind of more the kind of breakdown and leaving.
So what's you said there's music. I noticed there's going to be vendors there. So obviously it's a little different from Burning Man in that the money economy is not excluded specifically from the event, which I think is personally a good thing. I mean, it's like the idea of creating an island of money-free separate from the rest of reality. And the bioregional movement, Cascadia movement, is all about kind of homegrown, locally grown, businesses, and a different kind of business model itself. But you can, that's just my opinion. You can talk about that or answer the other question, which is what else is going on at the festival?
Yeah. So, you know, and it started out, and actually we, so this year is, we're, you know, it's our first year, and so we're realistically expecting maybe 75 to 150 people, and, you know, it actually had the potential to be much, much larger, and we kind of made the intentional decision to scale it back a little bit, you know, and I think with the idea that we really want to focus on having a good event this year, and then with getting everybody there so that we can begin discussing next year. And so, you know, right now we have about 10 bands, which will be going on over, you know, I think Friday and Saturday. And then we also have a whole series of workshops and presentations and presenters that will be talking, everything from, you know, consciousness and hip-hop to bioregionalism 101 to, you know, kind of plant ID and kind of these kind of indoor and outdoor activities. And then the host of the event, the Finney Farm, is just amazing. And so it's kind of it's a working farm that's the majority of which is actually land trust. It's second growth forest. And, you know, they have more than 100 acres there. But the majority is actually just kind of forested land, so it's not actually usable. And then there's a river that runs on the side, and it's right in the kind of in the foothills of the mountains. And so it is kind of this really green, dripping environment. So it should be just perfect for our first event. And it was also the host of the first kind of radical mycology convergence a couple of years ago. And so we're just excited to be there, and we're really excited that the event's happening. So that's kind of that's our main priority this year, and we're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was at the Finney Farm, I don't know, maybe 20 years or more ago. I remember it was started by some Earth First buddies back in the day.
Absolutely.
So it'd be kind of cool to see it again.
It's a series of Cascadia Earth Firsters, absolutely.
Yeah, and so we do have actually a caller, so let's go to that caller right now. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. My name is Rochelle, and I'm a big supporter of Cascadia, and I'm really excited to hear about your festival. I think it's really true. We do have a lot of unique festivals in the Northwest, and I just wanted to say I wanted to give a shout-out for what's going on at Last Thursday. Cascadia has had a presence a lot at Last Thursday with booths and getting the word out, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody's cross-pollinating on the fact that Last Thursday, which is our free festival that's, you know, going on 17 years in Portland, and spontaneously assembled, you know, on last Thursday, is now going to be hijacked by our mayor and our city with ordinances. And so this whole corporatized, commercialized, and co-op thing is moving forward in many ways. And I, you know, Burning Man is one example, and last Thursday is coming. So I just want to urge everybody to, you know, realize that these are First Amendment rights, I think, free speech, free assembly. And the more we keep these things going and alive, the more chance we have to connect and make change. So I just wanted to shout that out and say fantastic what you're doing. Wish I could be there, but I hope also people who haven't left to go there, you know, come out for the last Thursday tomorrow and sort of make that known. So yeah, thanks.
Great. Well, thanks for calling.
Here.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, you are listening to KBOO Community Radio in Portland. And I'm Paul. I'm speaking with Brandon from Seattle and Cascadia Now, who's helping to organize the Raining Man Festival coming up this weekend. And if you would like to talk on the air yourself, don't be shy. The number is 503-231-8187. And seriously, we'd like to also, you know, have more of a kind of a back and forth. If you have any pushbacks, if you have any concerns, issues in about the idea of Cascadia for whatever reason, please share them with us. Because I know, you know, these things are out there in the community. And I remember hearing about Cascadia back in, I think it was 1985 or 86 when I was working with the Alliance newspaper, which was one of the first kind of, I mean, it kind of picked up from Rain magazine. We had a guy who came over from Rain magazine, which was really probably the first publication in Portland, really the first place that really started talking about this. I think they published the first maps of Cascadia, who actually came from Steve Johnson, who then then Micah McCloskey, I believe his name is, took that idea up and made the maps we know about now. And Steve Johnson, of course, was working with Rain magazine, which came out of the 1970s. Again, this whole older tradition of the counterculture from the 60s leading into kind of both the back to land movement and sort of these alternative political socio-geographical ideas, concepts. Anyway, so yeah, that has a rich tradition here in the Pacific Northwest, and the Alliance was one of the first places that really spread this kind of more on a grassroots basis. The Alliance was sort of the progressive, I say was, because unfortunately a couple of years it hasn't been printing, but it was sort of the voice of the progressive community for decades. It was one of the longest running alternative newspapers, and unfortunately, if anybody out there wants to bring it back, it's a worthy project. In any case, yeah, we became a bi-regional networking newspaper with local editions in Olympia. It's called the South Sound Edition, and the Southern Willamette out of Eugene, the Mid Willamette out of Corvallis, and the Columbia Willamette Confluence out of Portland. And we talked about a lot of the ideas, and then the whole Cascadia forest defense movement kind of emerged out of that whole scene and sort of spread it further. So, old history, but here we are, 2014, talking about the Raining Man Festival, the first one with Brandon. And if you have anything to talk about, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. So again, you said there's a number of workshops, and you anticipate people coming from all around the region? Do you kind of have a sense yet?
It's nice. Yeah, we have a good feel, and we got people coming from actually dozens of different places. And actually, I guess while we're on the topic of events, I guess I will also use this as an opportunity to plug. I think in 2015, we will also be helping with organize the third Cascadia Poetry Festival, which this year will be held up in Nanaimo. And a lot of the characters I think that you were just talking about, David McCloskey, and then also here in Seattle, we work very closely with Paul Nelson, who's been a longtime advocate and member of this kind of like bioregionalist movement, kind of helped put it on. Last year we had it at, it happens in May, and so it'll be at the very beginning of May up in Nanaimo, and that's Vancouver Island. And this will be our first event in British Columbia. But last year we had it here in Seattle at Seattle University, and it was amazing. It drew dozens of poets and artists from around the region, and we had more than 1,200 people attend. It's one of the, it was probably one of the most successful poetry events of its kind in the country. And so that was really amazing, because I think it really harks back to this idea of storytellers, and then what the role of poets and writers and artists can be in helping kind of define and share and raise awareness about that kind of bioregional identity. And so that was really amazing to see. And anybody who has time should certainly check it out. It's CascadiaPoetryFestival.org. And we're just really excited because more and more of these types of events are happening. And I think that's really where, that's really what kind of gives us excitement and what we're looking forward to.
So, I don't want to overemphasize this difference or whatever perceived difference between Burning Man and Raining Man. But I think it exemplifies some larger differences that have kind of been with us for maybe, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of years even, but sort of different approaches towards dealing with the reality of power, inequalities of power, and the response to institutional dynamics that are unequal, that are destructive of certainly of the environment. And so, I've never been to Burning Man. I don't want to characterize it over much, but this idea that, of creating this sort of this temporary island of alternatives, while, it seems like the Cascadian movement is that's not a bad thing. Festivals have a long and important tradition of people gathering together and taking a break from the stresses of daily life and just taking a break. And but what we're taking a break from is really the crucial problem. And I think Cascadia really has a vision for actually, not giving up on the idea of actually thinking together to actually transform that reality rather than escaping from it or ignoring it or whatever. And I know there's a lot of different visions within Cascade that we should probably talk about. This article here from 2012, then there's many like it. Cascadia now advocates shift in culture, not secession, that whole idea of secession. So maybe you could just, we could just start talking a little bit about what, do you have a political vision, not in the sense of party politics, but what is your vision of your personal vision and maybe of your group of Cascadia?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it's also a very large question, but I'll do my best to answer that, I guess. So one, I think you touched on a really important subject, and that's how we fit into these systems. And I think Cascadia offers this amazing alternative because what I personally get really tired of and what I think we've lost kind of our way or track is that I think there's so many things going wrong, or there's so much that we all can just, we look at and it just, there's a lot of really bad things happening right now. And I think so much of our energy and time gets spent into fighting, these things that we're really strongly against, that it almost kind of like, for a lot of people, starts to define ourselves, starts to define our actions through what we're against rather than what we're for. And so for Cascadia, it's kind of this amazing opportunity for this, and I'll go all the way for radical utopianism. I think that's wonderful because what it does is it creates a space, and it creates a new space that's totally undefined. And it lets people kind of challenge these notions and say, well, if I could do anything in the world right now, reality set aside, what would I be doing? And for us, Cascadia becomes this tool then to say, like, wow, we could be doing all of these amazing things. Why aren't we? And then within that, it also becomes this tool to take a lot of these global issues or these larger problems that maybe aren't being tackled or seem really unmanageable, and it breaks it down to that local level where that change is happening on a day-by-day basis. And so for Cascadia now, what we really, what we do more than anything else is just hook people into what's already happening in all of these amazing scenarios. And so for Raining Man, and you talk about Burning Man and fitting into this, rather than say like protesting Burning Man, it's much more about like, let's create our own space. And rather than talk about these ideals that aren't being followed, let's talk about the ideals that we would want to bring to our own event and that we really can. And I guess it's interesting because I actually see, Raining Man as a great opportunity for networking as well, but maybe it's in a very different way. Maybe it's not about money, but it's about building connections and building community. In all of these kind of different ways. And I guess then to talk about the political aspects, that's another really interesting one. And that's probably the idea that's gotten us more attention than kind of really anything else. And maybe if nothing else, what we're doing is we're planting a seed. We're planting a seed for the future that, maybe something else is possible, something else is kind of achievable outside of the spectrum that's already been set and defined. For Cascadia now, what we really focus on is using Cascadia then as a way, hopefully, to really engage with the 15 million people who live in this region, a way to positively connect with those people and hopefully get them engaged. And rather than secession or all these other things, what we'd really like to do is get people active, engaged, empowered around issues that they feel important. And that, whatever those issues are, we think that people should be connecting with those and getting out in their communities and connecting with their neighbors about those issues to really make them pressing and move away from the idea that somehow going into a voting box every 4 years will solve our problems, or that somehow these people that we elect will solve our problems. We think that we should each have the voice that helps determine that. So that's kind of what, maybe I say in broad strokes. For the secession idea, that's always kind of an interesting one. I do think that culture is really kind of the important aspect, so culture and regional identity. But it really is interesting how much excitement and interest this kind of notion of the politics kind of generates with people. And I do think that we have to be very careful when we have that discussion, because I think there's no faster way to ruin a movement than the politics. And so I don't think we're jumping in anywhere, but there are now hundreds of people kind of talking amongst themselves and exploring kind of these ideas. You know, well, so what would a Cascadia politic look like? Would it be a political party? No, because political parties are horrible. You know, so then how do we kind of like maybe utilize and capture this kind of Cascadia spirit, but without fitting into those dominant kind of cultures or the dominant kind of corruption that kind of already exists in our political structures? And so that's a great question, and I think a question that we'll probably be exploring for a long time.
Yeah, it's not going to go away anytime soon, that's for sure. So, again, we're talking with I'm talking with Brandon Letzinger, and with Cascadia Now organizer, one of the organizers of the Raining Man Festival coming up this weekend. And I seem to be the only one talking with you because, as contrary to usual in this talk show, we don't have a lot of callers. And that's fine because we get a chance to talk more fully amongst ourselves. But I would like to encourage people to call in 503-231-8187. And it's coming up on 8:44. I would like to let you know what's coming up on KBOO. At 9 on Political Perspectives, we hear activists Jeff Jones, Bernadine Dorn, and Bill Ayers, who spoke at this year's Oregon Country Fair about current social justice issues and activism. Isn't that interesting? At 10, it's Air Cascadia Headlines, interviews and commentary with Chris Andre. 10:15, Flashpoints returns to Gaza to speak with an international solidarity volunteer about the possibility of a lasting ceasefire agreement with Israel. And guest host Kevin Pina speaks with Yvonne Ridley about the case of a neuroscientist and former student of Noam Chomsky, sentenced to 86 years in a maximum state prison in Texas. And at 11 on the Recovery Zone, Stuart Watson of Resolutions Northwest discusses the Neighborhood Mediation Program. Call in with your issue. And thank everybody for your contributions to making this station possible. We appreciate it. And if you haven't become a contributing financial member, you can do that by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And once again, the number is 503-231-8187. We've only got 15 minutes left. I'd like to have people call. And you know, one thing, Brandon, that I hear a lot from, you know, from political activists and definitely with you know, people who really think about this stuff and are very passionate and maybe not, you know, I don't know how familiar they are with the history and ideas of bioregionalism and Cascadia, but they have an idea that they've maybe gotten about it, that it is exclusionary, and sort of they a lot of people raise the idea of, well, what, you know, what about immigrants, you know? And that's a difficult question for anybody, but it sort of presupposes that we actually have the possibility of if that was desired, to actually, you know, become an independent entity from the United States of America, which doesn't seem likely anytime real soon. Although, you know, things change fast. The Soviet Union certainly collapsed within a remarkably short period of time, and other things like that have happened. But, you know, that's one issue, just, you know, the immigrants from south of the United States border, I think, is what people are mainly talking about, and dealing with the racism, dealing with the social exclusion, dealing with all these issues. But I don't know, you can address that. But, you know, in combination with that, there's this Cliff Mass, the weatherman who's got his own blog, came out with a blog recently talking about how in the Pacific Northwest, if you read the IPCC reports and others on global warming, the conclusion you inevitably come to is that the Pacific Northwest is or will be an oasis for climate refugees. And looking at what's happening in California and the Southwest, this seemingly millennial drought that's going on, which is changing the landform itself because of the evaporation of all the water, it does not seem like necessarily an impossible or even unlikely scenario that this is become. I mean, the population is just booming here in Portland. Construction is going on massively, and that is partly from people fleeing from these areas. So I've dumped another huge question on your lap. You can choose to take it. But we also have two callers, so it's your choice. Would you like to go to callers, or would you like to tackle that question?
Well, that's a great question. I guess I'll be quick. I would just like to say that, you know, it's funny. I always think of Cascadia as a very inclusive movement. If we're talking about immigrants, I usually just think we're making jokes about Californians. But, you know, I mean, I guess in a more serious sense, you know, in Seattle, we've got the fastest growth in the country right now. I think it ranges between 4% here in the city, 7% in the region. I mean, it's huge and it's fast and people are moving here. And I think, you know, so Cascadia actually is very relevant in that we need to be set up to handle that, and we need to be set up to do it responsibly and sustainably and actually look at the impacts of say, construction, look at the impacts of sprawl, look at the impacts of this, and then how can we be doing it more effectively so that we're reducing our impact? Because if you look at the Cliff Mass blog, you know, you will see that probably people will continue to move here. And, you know, I think it's just important that we can do that effectively and responsibly. Dennis Hayes, founder of the Bullet Institute here in Seattle. He's also, I mean, he's kind of a huge name because he does all of the sustainability work, and they just recently built the Cascadia Center, which is kind of the greenest office building, mixed use, you know, whatever. But, you know, he's the founder of Earth Day, and he talks about the Cascadia sustainability movement. And a big part of what he talks about is this idea that, you know, he could have gone anywhere in the world. He could have started an international NGO, but instead he decided to come here and focus on building an environmental movement and an environmental organization that focuses on the Northwest. And that's because, you know, for a lot of ways, we actually live very well comparatively to the rest of the world. And so within that, if the change is going to happen anywhere, it can happen here. We have the mind, we have the culture, we have the attitude, we have the resources and the capacity and capabilities to actually impact and affect that change. And by affecting that change, then we can actually be a role model for other areas rather than waiting or petitioning for other people to do it. So that's going to be my answer in a short snippet, and now I'm fine for phone calls.
Great. Well, let's go to a first one. DJ, you're on the BJ, you're on the air.
I think it's 500,000 in Portland and thereabouts, and that's where I live in North Portland. And I'm at a stage where I'm beyond my ego now. I'm down with threatening diseases, and I fell down yesterday and crawled around on the floor to try to get help, just to get my alert thing. But you don't want to call your alert thing because a fire truck comes over with an axe to tear your door down, and I have a steel door. Anyway, I want to tell you something. There's a lot more going on here. You got to let the ego go. These people are going to set you up to do businesses and things. I think that's the place you're talking about over on Vancouver, those beautiful buildings they're building. They've got all that money from the banks, subprimes, collateralized. They have to reinvest that money. They got government money, and they got all that money more or less, and they're getting interest on it while they're going. Do you guys have anything to say about that?
I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
I talk fast. My sister fired me from Paramount Studios because I was in production because I was different and I was well at those days and I had a big ego. And I'm now really going to die pretty soon, and I'm going to let that ego go. And then when I'm re-brought back, my soul comes back in another little infant. That's the only thing I have to go on. That's what she told me.
Yeah, but you let's get back to your point about Vancouver you were talking about.
Yeah, there was a big buildings being built down on Vancouver Boulevard Avenue and right by New Seasons and Williams. That's a lot of money they're investing.
Okay.
My relative checked, or somebody I know, not relative friend, and he said there were $2,000 a month for those little Fibber McGee closet.
Oh, okay. I see. I see what you're talking about. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit a month or two ago about the construction of these kind of box condos and apartments replacing the existing housing stock often. And I don't know. You see the same thing up in Seattle, Brandon. The raising of like half blocks and blocks, and putting up these like 2-3 story block like structures.
It's the mixed use residential commercial, right? Yeah, I got a block, 2 blocks away from my house that they just completely tore down, and they're doing that with. And so you have this kind of also combination. I think Portland and Seattle are two places that you really, the character is really defined for these amazing residential neighborhoods, I think. And so it's really too bad to see kind of a lot of it being torn down, a lot of the character being removed.
But it seems almost inevitable. I mean, if you're talking about fitting, you know, hundreds of thousands of more people, and we still have a capitalist system driven by, you know, the desire for profit and these market forces, I mean, unless we're able to get influence at that level, how do we gain control over this process? Is it even possible?
And that's a great point. And I think that's actually why it's so important to focus locally, and why it's so important to have kind of like this grassroots and community movement, because it feeds into so many different things. I mean, this is kind of what we're talking about now, I guess, would be this idea of density for density's sake. And here in Seattle, we just slashed our bus funding. And so meanwhile, we have less like 4 or 7% growth on a yearly basis. And then we're cutting our metro. We're cutting our buses. We don't have light rail here. And so, it's kind of got to, we need to shift that thinking away from just density for density's sake, and much more into like actual livable communities that are sustainable, that are responsible, and that where we've actually invested in them. Invested in the community members. Another issue that's actually very big here is that, you know, now we have these New York banks that are buying up, literally thousands of residential homes so that they can flip them over, rent them, tear them down, whatever, make a profit. But they're literally, you have hedge funds that are, setting aside $6 billion to buy houses in cash that are competing against, normal people that would normally be buying those houses. And they're driving the prices way up and making it very unaffordable. And so because of that, land is going up, rent is going up, and all of these other things. And meanwhile, we're slashing the services that you would think a city would actually need.
So there's so much to talk about just on that alone, and we have only 5 minutes left, and there's many things we haven't touched upon, but we do have one more caller. Kurt, you're on the air.
And thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to thank Brandon for contributing to creating an alternative festival to something I think has become more marketable to the 1% with Burning Man. The prices to get into that anymore are just cost prohibitive. More on topic, I've been contemplating calling early in the show to pose a question about Cascadia and the whole concept. And to my way of thinking, it has a serious identity crisis going on. It doesn't seem as though people are really defining it as either a cultural concept or a political concept, geographical concept. So basically, I would just pose the question, what's the point? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you again for taking my call.
Okay, well, thank you. Brandon?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that actually kind of comes up very commonly. And so that's something that I think a lot of effort has been going into, and something that we're getting a lot better at. I would just like to say that, you know, this is the years of, hundreds and thousands of people kind of coming together and personally connecting with this idea. And when you have a region as diverse as the Northwest, you're going to get a lot of different diverse ideas and opinions. But what's exciting now is I think we're doing a better job of defining what that actual space is. So you have the Cascadia Education Project, which focuses exclusively kind of on this bioregionalism, deep ecology, the spirituality aspect. Cascadia Now, we're much more focused on raising awareness of what Cascadia is, introducing it to the general public, and then also trying to connect people in to all of these different actions and activities and events and projects. And then there is a political movement that's actually forming and really challenging the question of what that looks like. And that's going under the name Cascadia Independence Party, even though it doesn't have any plans to run anything. But it is starting to, you know, and it's got 400 members that have joined there. But, you know, I think a lot of this actually is very healthy. It's not bad, because Cascadia is this incredible notion and idea that spreads person to person. It's not us telling people what Cascadia is. It's people going out and stumbling on it, or their friend knows of it, and their friend tells them about it, and then they get really excited about it and go out and start sharing it with all of their friends. And so it's very organic, and I think that that's actually great. You know, it's amazing to me, you know, how many people have heard of it, how they've heard of it. My favorite thing is just listening. You know, I used to tell people about what Cascadia is, and now I think it's so fantastic that, you know, now I hear people telling me what Cascadia is. And so it's kind of this, and it's emerging. It's now, you know, we now connect with, I mean, it's tens of thousands of people. In the last 3 months, we started doing a free sticker campaign. We crowdsourced the first batch, and then we've been sending out free stickers, but we've gotten more than 70,000 stickers out in 3 months. And so the interest is growing so rapidly right now, and I think there are these kind of common principles, but everybody has these kind of different priorities. And so for some people, it's very strongly environmental, and it's about them doing everything they can to kind of preserve and protect the things that make this area special. For a lot of people, it's really cultural, and it's a way that they self kind of connect with it, because they play soccer, or they drink beer, or they brew their own beer.
So Brandon, I just have to interrupt. I'm sorry. Yeah. I also have to apologize to the other caller that we just don't have time. I strongly encourage people to call earlier in the program. When you call within the last 3 or 4 minutes, it just makes it difficult, because Brandon Letzinger of Cascadia Now, just to remind us, we need to remind people of this Raining Man Festival, where, when, and the website, so people can get more information before as we close.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be RainingMan2014.org, and starts this Labor Day. It goes from Friday through Monday. It should be a great weekend of music and music events, presentations, workshops, panels up at Finney Farm near Concrete, Washington. So it's a bit of a drive, but it'll be a great weekend. It'll be a lot of fun, and we look forward to seeing everybody there. And if not, sometime in the future. And it was great talking with you.
And likewise, and if you want to go up from Portland, you can call me at KBOO, because there are people going up from Portland if you're interested. 503-231-8032.
Yeah, and they do have a van or bus available.
Okay, thanks, Brandon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
It's KBOO Portland.
Good people, we at Guess Who's Coming to Radio are back with our annual celebration of teacher Michael Jackson. On Thursday, August 28th, from 8 p.m. to midnight, we will be exploring previously unreleased works, guest spots, words of wisdom from the teacher, as well as a conversation with Talib York of the tribute band Who's Bad. Stay tuned on August 28th from 8 to midnight, where we honor Michael Jackson on Guess Who's Coming to Radio on KBOO, your community radio.
Wednesdays for an afternoon of jazz. Hosts of Jazz Lives, A Jazz World, and Jazz in the Afternoon play the very best in jazz music. From the historical to the present, and jazz of all stripes. Swinging, smoking, bluesy, funky, new and old, but all good. That's Wednesday afternoons from noon to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
The time is 9:01. You're tuned to KBOO.